Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. That is a warm felt, hearty welcome back. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that takes on all of the problems, because this show is taking on compliance to the Constitution. We're going to get into some of this today, but bottom line, most every single problem that we are experiencing from government, whether that be at any level, it has a lot to do with compliance to the Constitution. So with that, the number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. I know that there's breaking news that's not going to go away, because Pelosi's going to have the House vote to block the national emergency that Trump's called. That's going to be coming up in a few days. So it's not going to go anywhere. I don't want to necessarily divert. I've said in the past that we should stop following leaders, or even allowing leaders to go places in the snow and make it easier for people to follow them. It's unfortunate that we are in, and I'll just say this, that I've been harping on the fact that we are under an invasion. We have a constitutional obligation to stop this and to ensure that there is no infiltration across our border lines, period. Whether that be a family or whether that be a bunch of thugs, it really doesn't matter. The principle is the principle that we have a boundary and we have a process for people to come here, come through our ports of entry with our approval. If not, you're violating our Constitution. And anybody that is supporting, anyone that is supporting the contrary, to allow people to violate our Constitution, should be removed from office and should be kept or banned from ever taking up any public service ever again. So just to keep this straight here, Pelosi and all those who are going to vote against this national emergency should be considered as a qualification of no longer being able to be a public servant per Article 4, Section 3. That simple. Now, I'm expecting to have some time to dive into the militia background today and getting into what the framers were really focused on and why the militia is so important. As you start reading this dialogue and start understanding, they hung a lot of things on the militia. And I mean that. They were contingent. The militia was contingent on the calling of martial law. If they weren't calling on the militia, the federal government could not call upon martial law. So the whole fact is that what they started doing, as they started ignoring the militia, they were trying to set the stage, because they were violating the Constitution by ignoring the militia, but they were setting the stage for creating standing armies. And we'll get into that. And as you read this, they all were very well aware and fearful of standing armies. And there's a reason for that, because the standing armies are accountable to, you know, if you understand what happened at Bunkerville, and if you understand what happened with Clive and Bundy and all of those when they were engaged with the armed forces of the federal government under BLM, FBI, and so forth, I just can't imagine how Americans would be so willing to pick up arms and shoot Americans standing up for the Constitution. It defies logic. And the fact is that there are people that are donning the uniform today that won't even hesitate to shoot somebody to further the cause and to support the tyranny that they believe is necessary. I can't believe that we're in this position today in such an immoral attitude, especially when you start understanding how the framers had framed it and how we have been established in with all of these checks and protections. Well, let me dive forward and let me get into the groveling, because, you know, what day would it be if I didn't grovel? I mean, it's just a standard day, right? If you want to help us, and as I'm hoping that today is a day that actually compels some of you, or at least motivates some of you to get involved. We have a GoFundMe campaign on GoFundMe. It's a crowdsourcing campaign, actually. And so we would ask that you donate if you can. And if you can't, send me an email. The link to the GoFundMe campaign is on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And the email is info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I will let you know. Just let me know what you can do, what time you have, or what have you, and we will start getting you engaged. I know that there's nothing better than feeling like you're part of something that actually will solve the problem. There's nothing worse than exercises in futility, where you think you're involved in something, then all of a sudden you realize that this isn't going to fix anything. We're not about that. And so let's kind of move forward, because the other thing I always do is I do look in the news, and there's no sign that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. What they're going to do is they're going to continue to oppress us, and they're going to continue to move forward. Now, Trump, he's doing some good things, but you can't say everything he's doing is good, because he's actually still supporting some things that are really bad. So what are we going to do? Well, I say that we stand up and start enforcing the Constitution and demand that everybody that's a public servant fulfill their oath of office or get banned from being able to serve. It's that simple, really. Now, yesterday, I ended the show talking about Saudi Arabia and how they're funding the jihadist movement over in India through Pakistan in giving them $20 billion in attacking and helping move the cause of Islam forward. Well, I'm telling you, it just doesn't end there. Saudi Arabia, as you know, they were financial backers for 9/11. They were financial backers for the jihadist movement around the world. So there's no doubt in my mind that the wealth we are giving them for their oil is being used to force in fighting opponents of Islam. So we have to start standing up against that. And one of the best ways is to take their financing. What is the best way of getting rid of buying Saudi oil? Well, I mean, if they're putting the oil into the market space to where it's hard to determine where that oil is coming from, then, you know, we won't be able to do that. But there are other mechanisms, and I'm hoping that we get Republic Review moving forward so that we can actually create a strategy that will alleviate our dependency on oil. And I'm not talking about this, you know, green religion crap. I'm talking about having a strategy that moves us forward into the 21st century to where we are no longer dependent on buying any type of fuel from anybody. Wouldn't it be great? Because I've talked about this before. Energy is the fundamental element of productivity. For you to get to work, you have to spend energy. For you to do anything, you have to consume energy, which for a human body is food. Or for you to, you know, do your work in programming, you need a computer, and that takes energy. There is energy involved in productivity. There is a symbiotic relationship between energy and productivity. And so I am telling you that we need to start fighting Islam. And the best way to do that is this is just one tract, or this is just one tentacle of the beast. And so we can fight the one tentacle, or we can go after the entire beast. And I'm telling you, if we're going to win, we have to go after the entire beast, because fighting the one tentacle is an absolute waste of time. Literally, there's no winning when you just fight a tentacle, especially with this beast, because it's constantly growing new tentacles. Folks, the most important thing everyone needs to understand is this paradigm does not change on its own, especially this jihadist paradigm. As America becomes less accepting of the intolerance of the jihadist, the intolerance of the communists, the intolerance of these people who want to subjugate us, whether that be here or around the world, they will be using any means necessary, including force, like they're doing in India, to obtain the dominance they seek both here and abroad. We've got to start waking up. So let me talk about the other intolerant among us, and that is the communist. Our national indoctrination system and their civil war, because they are waging a civil war. What is a civil war? A civil war is a war over the control of government. And they are waging a civil war in America. So if you get the Need to Know News from Ed Griffin, he actually provided some really good insight on this Red for Ed, hashtag Red for Ed. And I'm going to get into that because I realize that music means that something's happening. So we're going to go into a break. But when we come back, I'm going to get into this new movement that is galvanizing the far left, and the communists are getting excited. So we will be right back after a couple of promos. So please stay tuned, because you're going to want to hear this, because it all ties to us banding together. So we'll be right back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. So as I was just saying, the left has a new movement in their civil war, and it's called Red for Ed, that aims to convert purple states to blue, to solidify blue states and put red states in play using the education system as their power base. I've been telling you that the education system is a part of the Bolshevik Revolution. They are creating the, let's call them useful idiots, that's what I've called them before, The highly organized movement has targeted the Electoral College for the 2020 presidential election. I've talked about this as well, that there is a huge movement that wants to actually throw away their Electoral College, and it's unconstitutional, by the way. The only way you can make changes to the Electoral College is via the Constitution. You have to have a constitutional amendment to change that. Even if states are willingly throwing theirs away, they are violating the Constitution. Does that make sense? I'm hoping it does. So what they're trying to do is go after the margins of victory, which are very narrow for Trump, as we already know. We already know that the Electoral College, I shouldn't say the Electoral College, the electorate process has been infiltrated by 16 more million dolts that have come out of the education or indoctrination centers since 2016. This is going to be a very close election. Recently, teachers in Los Angeles and Denver went on strike embracing the Red for Ed platform, which seeks more pay for teachers, no accountability for education results, and removal of financial support for charter schools and to compete with government schools. So in other words, they're isolating themselves and creating a monopoly so that they can ensure that all the kids are partakers of their indoctrination. The teachers' union effort has its roots in the very same socialism that President Trump vowed in his 2019 State of the Union address to stop. And it began in its current form in early 2018 in a far-flung corner of the country before spreading nationally. Its stated goals, higher teacher pay and better education conditions, are overshadowed by a more nefarious political agenda, a leftist Democrat uprising designed to flip purple to red states blue using the might of a significant part of the education system as its lever. If you're not aware, Oregon is already flirting with the concept of allowing 16-year-olds and above to vote in 2020. Do you understand? They know that there is a large voter block that is coming out of their education system, and they can't let them vote soon enough. Let me add to this, the cost of illegal immigration is taking a toll as well. And this is directly in context to all of the things that the beast is providing. There was an English teacher in a second in English as a second language down in Southern California, that's where the teacher was teaching, explains the true cost of illegal immigration and shows that so-called cheap labor may be cheap for the employer but expensive to taxpayers. We all know this, right? The benefits to illegal aliens include subsidized housing, food stamps, free insurance, free education for children, plus free breakfasts and lunches while they're going to school, and subsidized energy bills, Social Security benefits, free childcare, and more. Meanwhile, taxpayers are stuck with higher insurance rates, higher medical costs, increasing crime, lower standards of education in schools, and overcrowding in their schools. They know what they're doing, and they're literally putting our liberties and what is best for this nation in their crosshairs, because what they believe is best is to subjugate all. Folks, I want you to understand and recognize the Bolshevik revolution that is being organized in our republic. The Islamist movement and the underwriters of this movement, such as Saudi Arabia, are doing everything they can, both here in America. They're helping funding some of this crap. The school system and the Red for Ed movement is a huge part of this as well. I have been telling you this. The illegal aliens and their pathway to voting, as well as the refugees, are also a part of this Bolshevik revolution. There are groups that are myopically focused. These are good groups, but they're myopically focused on one particular problem. That one particular problem may be Islam, like Act for America. That one particular problem may be abortion. That one particular problem may be illegal immigration or laws that target, you know, exporting the criminals and those. They're myopic. There is only one organization that is taking them all on, and they're not directly engaging in these pawns. You've got to understand that when you engage in abortion, you're just fighting the pawn of the beast. When you're fighting homosexual marriage, you're just fighting the pawn of the beast. The orchestrators want us to focus on the pawns. That way, we can't hurt the beast. Do you understand this? If you want to fix all the problems attacking America, the only organization that is really reclaiming the republic and taking on the beast is this one. This is because we are focused on killing the beast, and that is what is possessing our government. If you look, our government, our Constitution does not reflect all these entitlement states. These things are, it is the beast possessing our government. We have to do, let's just call it an exorcism. We have to get the evil that is possessing our constitutional republic and our government out. And there's only one way to do that, and that is to enforce the Constitution. What other single organization is going to end the federal government's involvement in marriage, abortion, the welfare state that actually benefits things like, let me see here, let's call up the things that they're benefiting from. I would probably venture to say housing. Education, the illegal immigration, the refugee systems. I mean, the welfare state is benefiting all of these, and it's including the nationalized healthcare, the nationalized urban and housing development, and even our inept energy strategy. Centralized or nationalized controls of labor. The union is trying, they recognize that the union is in danger of becoming obsolete. And so that's why they're getting very mobilized in trying to grow. Because I think in the 30s, there was a hyper, you know, it was almost quarter of the country was unionized. And today it's, when I was going through schooling for my degree, I think it was less than 10%. So they recognize that they're losing their influence in a lot of different industries, and they are working hard and centralizing labor at the national level, state level, and so forth. And that's one of the reasons why there's groups out there that are myopically taking on labor. But the whole focus is, what is it that is taking on all of these things in one fell swoop without actually going out to the tentacle or the pawn, such as all of these things I've already mentioned, whether that be the environmental agencies and the global agendas of like Agenda 21 and so forth, or even the centralized and nationalized legal system, as we complain about the Department of Justice, FBI, and all of those things, or the centralized banking and currency manipulation. We could go on and on and on. Every single one of these tentacles that the federal government is using to oppress us, they're all susceptible and can all be taken down if we force compliance to the Constitution, because all of those things are non-compliant to the Constitution. The federal government has no constitutional grounding and no basis for establishing these types of powers. These things get returned to the states, and now the states can enjoy figuring out what and how they're going to do this, where we the people have far greater influence in the states. And that's why they've been laughing at us, because they've been very successful in keeping us at bay in trying to focus us on these pawns. And I tell people all the time, every time you choose to go to court against the federal government regarding a jurisdiction that they have no jurisdiction over, such as marriage, such as abortion, such as health care, such as energy, education, all of these things we've been listing, that means you have surrendered to them already because you've just granted them an illegal form of jurisdiction over a matter they have no jurisdiction over. The only entities in the world that has jurisdiction over marriage, over healthcare, energy, EPA, all of these things are the states. So the states have to come together and say, hey, we got to take our jurisdiction back. Remember, if it is not an enumerated power within the Constitution, it is left to the states. So if one state comes up and says, hey, we want all our stuff back, that ain't going to do it. You have to have a coalescing of states, and all the states have to step up, stand up and say, we want all of our powers back that you have taken without our authorization. And that's what we call enforcing the Constitution. Well, as you can tell, I've got another break real quick. So we're going to be right back. We're going to wrap this up, and then we're going to get into the militia, because this is really important in understanding how this has infiltrated our republic.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So let me repeat what I just said, because it's important that you understand that forcing and enforcing compliance to the Constitution is the only path that takes care of so many problems. If you look at all of the unconstitutional government that we're facing, forcing compliance gets rid of it, at least at the national level, so they can't manipulate us down these globalist agendas and so forth. We need the federal government to be a buffer from the globalist agenda, not the manipulator and the puppet master pulling the strings in the states and the local levels. One would think that leaders of other organizations would be joining this effort, or especially these efforts, in some form or fashion. But I believe that they are following a fallacy because they believe that if they leave their organization as a leader, then they won't be able to lead. I'm telling you, there's 50 states out there that need leaders. And we're looking for all of these states to be led in requiring compliance to the Constitution. It's not my job to lead all 50 states. It's not my job to lead any of them. I am working with local leaders in every state to get them to rise to the occasion. And as I was having a conversation yesterday, once we get this thing moving with such force and momentum, it'll free me to actually dive into some of the topics that are even more pressing when we finally get on top of this. Because what do we do with all of these people in a welfare state? They're all over in every state. So what is the state's solution to doing this? Actually, it's very easy. And I'm going to be working on fixing that problem. The same thing with the energy problem. The same thing with the education problem. There are these things that are going to be coming back that the states are going to, it's going to be begging, what are we going to do with this now that, you know, it's up to our own demise? And there are ways of allowing these things to actually take a course of healing in a, I'll just call it a holistic approach. And I don't want to get into that now because I'm on a rant. And you don't want to, you know, you don't want to deviate too far off of a rant. But the fact is that there is plenty of room for leaders to lead in each of their states. So for the self-serving reasons, leaders, conservative entertainers, and a lot of folks out there are avoiding the solution because they believe they're in a better position for making money. There's a lot of money to be had on these problems, and I've proven that. There's millions, billions of dollars out there. And I'm telling you, there is room for everyone as long as the two qualifiers that I've been telling you for the past year are being met. If you want to come into this cause, you have to do two things. First, you have to set aside your differences. If you've got religious differences with other groups and so forth, it shouldn't matter. As long as we're all supporting individual liberty and individual sovereignty, there is a religion and an ideology out there that does not support individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and it is self-understood or it's self-revealing who that is. The other thing that you have to do, or they have to do, is they have to put aside their self-interest. It's not about making millions anymore. It's about solving the problem. What makes some of these supposed leaders come on board is when you come on board, because most or many of these types of leaders follow the flock. They just see that there's a bunch of lemmings out there running here and there. And I'm not trying to be disparaging towards you or the listening audience here. But the fact is, they see people out there and they go, huh, there's an opportunity for me to go out and lead those people. If they see you coming over here, then it is more likely that they will come over and join too, because they'll recognize that there's people over here that need leading. And if they're true leaders, they will get on board and they will be able to shed their differences and their self-interest and be able to roll up their sleeves and get involved. I'm here to tell you that this is the only solution that solves almost every single problem that we can imagine. There are other little problems. You know, we're not going to fix what you're having for dinner tonight. We're not going to fix some of those little teeny things. But when government is inflicting all sorts of misery, pain, and managing you when they don't need to be doing it, like how much water your toilet will allow to flush to get your poops into the pipe. And so here we go, folks. If you want to be a part of the solution, I'm just asking that you make this year, this moment in time, the commitment necessary in getting involved for our liberty, in preserving it for our posterity. You can be the leader and you can have all the credit in your county, in your state, your local community. It matters not to me. But all you've got to do is take that stand. So with that, I'm hoping this helps put it all together. Hoping that with the news of the day that I've kind of gone through and summarized, I know there's other news out there. Like I said, the emergency, the wall, but those are all myopic. As I've proven, that those are only the pawns that they want you to get involved in. So what we want to do today, and what I want to do, because as the federal government understood that the state's sovereignty was really being defended by this thing called the militia in our constitutional republic, they needed to get it to a point where they could marginalize the militia. They wanted to make sure that the states weren't so well guarded and that the militia was being ignored. Because, and this is going to come up, I'll read this, where they say, hey, just because the federal government is supposed to, you know, equip and train and do all of these things, it doesn't mean the state can't if they don't do it. Now, I'm telling you that what ends up happening, just like how it works in local politics, your politicians start feeding, you know, putting money into soup lines and all sorts of entitlements. And then when it comes to the fire season and having to deal with the fire, they go, hey, we don't have any money left. We're going to have to raise your taxes, because they know that they can raise your taxes at, you know, as it's like extortion, just like with law enforcement, just like with education. They'll come after you for the necessary services because they can extort it out of you. That's why they're constantly putting levies on your house or on your property or raising your taxes to provide the essential services. You go, where the heck is all the money going on anyway? And it's going on to things that they shouldn't be doing. And they convince you, oh, well, these things are necessary because these people need this. They need our help. And that pulls on your heartstrings, and okay, but you know what? That's where the churches come in. And that's why churches existed, is to provide the compassionate service, not government. It was repugnant to the framers that the federal government or the government in any capacity was involved in compassionate services. That was the true role of religion and community services, local community groups and involvements and so forth. So let me dive into some of the tidbits on the militia. And the first thing I want to kind of give you is a picture of what different states and how their paradigm was. Because I'm going to tell you, the reason why I lean on the Virginia ratification debates is because these men understood and had the difficult conversations in the details of the Constitution. Now, I've told you that the state that had the most mention of the word bank was four, and I think it was Massachusetts. I think in Virginia, they only used the word bank twice during their ratification debates. That's astounding, isn't it? Now, let's talk about how often they use the word militia. Next time, not today, but next time I'll give you how many times they use the word martial law. Anyway, Virginia mentioned the word during the ratification debates 268 times. The word militia was used. Massachusetts, it was only three. Philadelphia, or Pennsylvania, I mean, was only 14. North Carolina was 17. South Carolina was once, and New York was 12. And the other states, not that they didn't have interesting or, you know, good debates like New Hampshire and so forth. I just don't have access to those debates. I only have access to like the closing documents, which is unfortunate because the University of Wisconsin, I was telling somebody last night, the University of Wisconsin on their bicentennial efforts of 1976 started actually documenting this. The documentation history of the ratification debates of the Constitution. And as soon as they realized that what they were doing was proving that the federal government had no business doing almost everything it was doing, they really shut it down, or they actually silenced it, and they made it really hard to get these documents and access to them, and it's a very expensive process. With that, we're at a hard break, so we'll be right back diving into the militia as soon as we get back. Thank you so much. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so let me just dive straight into some of the dialogue here. The first up in the queue is Mr. Nason, and he was a delegate in Massachusetts. And this little tidbit, remember Massachusetts only made a couple of comments, right? But in this tidbit, he was basically begging people and kind of pointing out the natural defense. And as a matter of fact, pointed to how well the militia had performed, you know, not only just recently, but during the Revolutionary War. When I say recently, of the time of 1787, 1788 in the winter time, because this was February 1st when he made this comment. So it had to have been either at the end of 87 or early 88 when they were just out and deployed in dealing with some civil unrest. And so anyway, he says, "What occasion have we for standing armies? We fear no foe. If one should come upon us, we have a militia, which is our bulwark. Let Lexington witness that we have the means of defense among ourselves." And then he goes on to talking about if the last winter, and that's when he talks about, you know, the militia turning out and doing really good things and so forth. They were not concerned too much regarding the fact that they had a militia identified within the Constitution as our form of natural and national defense. In other words, the only mechanism that they had available to them in the Constitution was not a standing army. It was very specifically the militia. Now, down in North Carolina, Mr. McLean made a comment, and he goes, Because he's talking about how, you know, this concept of the federal government having controls over the militia is going to, you know, be detrimental and destructive to the Republic and the states. And he says, and he's referring to another gentleman during this debate. And he says, why is he not as much afraid as our legislatures will call out the militia to destroy our liberties? Will the militia be called out by the general government to enslave the people? To enslave their friends, their families, themselves? The idea of the militia being made use of as an instrument to destroy our liberties is almost too absurd to merit a refutation is what he referred to. But anyway, the whole point is that, you know, the anti-federalists were trying to say, hey, these states, these people that live next to us, your neighbors, you, who are all a part of the militia, are going to become the oppressors of ourselves. He's pointing out the absurdity of that. Mr. Iredell goes on, and this is on July 28, 1788. He says, with regard to the militia, it must be observed that though he has the command of them, he's referring to the president, when called into actual service of the United States, yet he has not the power of calling them out. The power of calling them out is vested in Congress for the purpose of executing the laws of the Union. When the militia are called out for any purpose, some person must command them, and who so proper is that person who has the best evidence of his possessing the general confidence of the people? I trust, therefore, that the power of commanding the militia then called forth in the actual service of the United States will not be objected to. So he's just pointing out that Congress had to call the militia out. It couldn't be the president. The president may be the commander-in-chief of the militia, but it's only when the militia is called into service. A standing army, the commander-in-chief is constantly in charge of. And that's one of the reasons why they demanded that we do not have a standing army, because they understood that it became the infliction branch of the executive, that the executive would use it very despotically, because that's what history has proven. In North Carolina, later on, Mr. Spate, on July 30th, stated this: is there the least color or pretext for saying that the militia will be carried and kept there for life? Because there was this argument that the militia could be, you know, perpetually called and become that standing army. Where is there any power to do this? The power of calling forth the militia is given for the common defense. And can we suppose that our own representatives, chosen for so short a period, only 2 years, will dare to pervert a power given for the general protection to an absolute oppression? That the people have a right to keep, and remember, I'm telling you this. This is 1788. This is the ratification debates of the Constitution. And he is already telling you that they have these rights. The Bill of Rights was not necessary, but he says this. That the people have a right to keep and bear arms, that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper, natural, and safe defense of a free state, that standing armies in time of peace are dangerous to liberties and therefore ought to be avoided as far as the circumstances and protection of the community will admit, and that in all cases the military should be under strict subordination to and governed by the civil power, that each state respectively shall have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining its own militia, whensoever Congress shall omit or neglect to provide for the same, that the militia shall not be subject to martial law. You hear this? They're talking about only when the militia is called can they call martial law, and that the militia is not subject to it. except when in actual service in time of war, invasion, or rebellion, or when not in the actual service of the United States, shall be subject only to such fines, penalties, and punishments as shall be directed or inflicted by the laws of its own state, not by the national laws. Because remember, the federal government doesn't have the ability to write any laws other than for treason, counterfeiting, you know, those few laws that they have been delegated in the Constitution. There was no question, none whatsoever, that the federal government was limited to what laws, what type of criminal laws they could create, period. Pretty simple, folks. Now, in Pennsylvania, Mr. Wilson goes on and he talks about the militia, and so I will expound upon what he says here. I really expected that for this part of the system, at least the framers of it would have received plaudits instead of censures. In other words, applause instead of boos, as they here discover a strong anxiety to have this body put upon effective footing and thereby in grand measure to supersede the necessity of raising or keeping standing armies. The militia formed under this system and trained by the several states will be such a bulwark of internal strength as to prevent the attacks of foreign enemies. I have been told that about the year 1744, an attack was intended upon France by France upon Massachusetts Bay, but was given up on the reading the militia law of the province. My point here, my friends, and what he's talking about is that the fact that they inserted the militia as the system of defense for the Constitution, and he was surprised that so many people in the ratification debates preferred to have a standing army when the framers had actually created a better system. And he's going, I can't believe this. Mr. McKean, during the Pennsylvania debates as well, stated, and this is on December 11th, 1787, it is objected that the powers of Congress are too large because they have the power of calling forth the militia on necessary occasions and may call them from one end of the continent to the other and wantonly harass them. Besides, they may coerce men to act in the militia whose consciences are against bearing arms in any case. It is true. By this system, power is given to Congress to organize and to discipline, organize and to discipline the militia, but everything else is left to the state governments. They are to officer and train them. Congress have also the power of calling them forth for the purpose of executing the laws of the Union, suppressing insurrections, and repelling invasions, but can it be supposed that they would call them, in such case, from Georgia to New Hampshire? Common sense must oppose the idea. I mean, what he's basically saying is they were afraid that the militia of their state would be called and gone from Georgia over to California or up to New Hampshire, when there would have been easily Virginia or several other states' militias that would have been able to assist in that need. And what we're looking at today with the 16 states that are suing the federal government regarding the wall and this border crisis and this invasion that we're facing, it is clear that the militia should be called, that President Trump should invoke the constitutional powers, or I should say that Congress should be doing this. But Congress, in actuality, let me silence that. In actuality, Congress is failing to do their job. They are violating the Constitution in the need for opposing an invasion, and that is a constitutional protection that they guarantee us from. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help, and we hope today is the day you make the commitment in getting involved. God bless, and we'll be back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.